Coming up in 2 minutes is the second part of season 2's third episode. But first, here's a short preview followed by a guest introduction.
Tiara, have you ever said this to Sage? And I found myself saying this. Aaron, we're going to be all right here. Don't take guilt with you up there. It's okay. See you soon. Please enjoy where you are.
Yeah. I do. My larger assumption is that where he is, there isn't any guilt. I don't know why, but the moment he was gone, I hope he knows how much I loved him.
Welcome to the Good Grief, Good God Show, hosted by Grammy nominee and Emmy Award-winning hit songwriter Brad Warren of the Warren Brothers. Join Brad monthly on the 1st, 3rd, and 5th Tuesdays, audio or on YouTube, for raw, honest conversation about surviving things that suck. For today's episode, Brad welcomes a musician, producer, singer-songwriter, and four-time Academy of Country Music award-winning bass player, Jimmy Lee Sloss. Jimmy's influence in the music industry is undeniable, but behind the spotlight lies a shared tragedy. Like Brad, Jimmy has endured the heartbreak of losing his son to addiction. I'm producer Matt Pivato. To learn more about today's guest, Brad, and the show, check the description where you'll find clickable links to access this episode's audio and YouTube links, to connect to the show on social media, and to visit goodgriefgoodgodshow.com. On the behalf of Brad's wife and executive producer Michelle Warren and segment producer and guest booker Lisa Bull, thank you for tuning in. The Good Grief, Good God Show is brought to you in loving memory of Sage Michael Warren. And today's episode is brought to you in loving memory of Aaron Sloss. To access part one of this episode, check the description for links.
Well, he just got out of rehab, right? When
he had been out of rehab maybe a year or so, 2 years. The last rehab he was in near Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Okay. So he went 3 or 4 of those, and they were great. And again, I would be there, go see, hang. Like all of us do, we're there. He held a job down for a while, was doing great, had an apartment up there, and then he moved back to Nashville, which in retrospect, at this point, he's in his 30s, early 30s. I can't say, no, you're not. You're not coming home where you were born and raised. He told me several years earlier when he was in Kentucky visiting his grandmother, he said, if I come back to Nashville, I'll die. And so he knew that, but he came back eventually, and you know, fentanyl, it's crazy.
Was it a pill?
I think he was smoking it.
Yeah.
I think he smoked it. He was living with his roommates in a place that I'd never been inside. Still haven't been inside that house, which someday, but I'm still not ready 4 years in. But I would, you know, go get him. We'd hang. We'd do our thing. We'd go skiing. You know, we got the place in Colorado. He and I were out there a bunch. You know, he was incredible snowboarder. And I'm just this, I'm a bass player. I'm lucky to play one string at a time.
You're really good, by the way, for an old guy, but I'm sure he was probably jumping. Like, my feet don't need to leave the ground.
I'm jumping by accident.
Yeah.
Okay, but so we had that, and it was so good. And we'd come back, and then he would go. He had his awesome house that he was renting, or he was living at with these cats. Beautiful. Better house than I live in. And so it was a real surprise to me, because I trusted that he was in a good, you know, environment.
Yeah.
But it didn't work out that way. And that's where he passed into the next world. But
and that last text he sent you.
About tough love. It showed up in our dynamic, in that, you know, if you say you're gonna be, so okay, whatever's going on, I don't know what's going on. You're calling me, you're texting me some, you'd fall off the grid for a few days here and there. Mm-hmm. Then you text, just say, if you're going to be somewhere, if you're going to Uber somewhere, let me trust you. Let's build trust here. I'm going to trust you're going to be there, and I'll meet you there. So that's kind of how it played out. We had a ski trip planned, snowboard trip planned, and he didn't show up. We were supposed to leave at like 3 a.m. here to make. He didn't show up right on time, and he didn't communicate the whole day. So I figured something was up, and I'll make this a short story. So
had you gone anyway?
So I went on anyway.
To Colorado, yeah.
Got there, and he called. He said, "Okay, I know." I said, "All right. So here's what I'm going to do. I've already gone on Southwest and booked you a flight this afternoon. I'll come back into Denver. We're going to do this. It's going to be great. Still, but I wanted to teach you a lesson, at least if I can, even now that you're a grown man.
Yeah, no.
That when you say something, I'm going to trust you.
You never stop being a father."
Right. So he said, "Great." And then he called me back. "I can't do it. Some people don't want me to come out there. You know, they don't want me to be there. They're talking me into staying here." His girlfriend at that point. So I went, okay. That was not a good moment. So I said, "All right, I love you. Crazy about you. Think about it. I'll come and get you tomorrow." So that didn't happen. That was the last ski trip we had planned that we didn't make. Get back into town. All's well. You know, we're going to go. We ate a few times, hung out, right? He was great. And then I was having dinner and I get a text saying, "Can we hang?" Again, I'm trying to be responsible, teach him. "Well, I would love to. Man, I'd love to." And this is another guilt thing that I have. Mm-hmm. But I am actually out right now with some people having dinner. And he said, "All good. Let's just have lunch tomorrow." I said, "Great. That sounds great. I'll see you tomorrow at lunch. We'll make it." I'm excited that he's talking to me. No distress kind of sounding text. And then he said, "Man, love you so much. I'm sorry for all the shiz." S-H-I-Z. And I said, "Dude, ain't no shiz. I love you." And that was it. Then I get the calls that we know at early in the morning, 6. And Kim called me. The police had tried to call me, but I guess I'd shut my phone off from dinner before or something. It was buzzing, but I didn't hear buzz. And she was way, way upset. I thought it was a joke. I said, "What? Isn't that what we do?"
And then, where does your ex-wife live?
She lives in Hermitage. Finally, they got a hold of her. I guess they went through his phone and saw my number. Might have been the last text or among the last texts. I don't know. And thus began this road right there. Boy, oh boy.
That's a crazy call, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is. You just can't believe it. You just keep thinking there's something wrong here. This is not real. I still have those moments.
Yeah. I will wake up and that's just a weird dream or.
Just for a moment.
And not wanting. Matt, is there a reason you want to take a break?
Yeah, I got to make a quick adjustment. My apologies.
I have a 2:00 with your buddy, Kenny Chesney.
Am I late? Yeah, well, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
All right, let's go. Come on.
The boss has spoken. Dude. Sit your ass down.
We love him. We need to get him a whip.
You're trying to get back to Texas. Tell me the truth.
So, a couple things I want to ask you. Not sure what order this stuff ought to be in. Not being married to Aaron's mom.
Oh,
anymore.
That's really
You have
good.
A wonderful wife.
That's really good.
Wife, not a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Heather.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Too good looking for you.
You know, I keep telling her that. And she says, I know.
It's cool. I'm good with it. No. But not being married to his mom, like I don't have that experience. This is a tough road. How challenging was that?
It's still challenging. It has been challenging, but not in a dark way. Mm-hmm. Not in like I can't bring it up. She knew Aaron. Mm-hmm. She'd gotten to know Aaron. It was still, they still weren't really, really extremely close. They just hadn't had that many years of, Aaron would be in LA or in Kentucky. And But they knew each other. We went on some snowboarding trips together, which again was key in building relationships back then. That was what Aaron and I were doing instead of drinking.
Yeah.
Instead of him drinking, instead of him. And man, I'm to the best of my knowledge, and an addict is, can be pretty sneaky, yeah, but to the best of my knowledge, there was nothing but snow.
In no, a dad knows. A dad, you know, knows.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
But it's been, if it's been an issue at all, it's showing up in that Heather doesn't feel worthy of the experience that I'm going through and that you are having with your.
So there's never a, hey, get it together, pal, and you have to explain to her, hey, this is too heavy, I can't just get it together.
No.
None of that stuff. Well, that's good.
No, no. She is sympathetic. She is amazing. When I got the call about Aaron, I drove straight to, we weren't married then, and I drove straight to her house over in Fairview. That's where I went. I didn't go to the scene of the crime. It was a crime scene at first because, you know, and the police didn't want us there. So I went to Heather's. And
it actually is a crime, by the way, because somebody put fentanyl in. And I'm not, believe me, I'm not a fan of drugs on the street. But I got a lot of years to figure out what this is doing to my life. And now I've had 18 years of being clean and understanding how it's different, but I was 36 years old. I didn't get poisoned at 20. I mean,
right.
You know,
it's everywhere now.
It's everywhere.
It's just everywhere. Fentanyl in particular. Just, but she's been awesome. She really has. But like I said, she struggles with not being the biological mother and still, cause I've asked her, I said, man, you should go to a meeting or something to, so you can hear the stories of other mothers that have lost.
Yeah.
And she just, it's something that's really hard for her to, she just doesn't feel worthy to do that.
That's interesting because there's something huge in your life she can't totally share.
That's right. Oh,
that's a big happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know that Michelle, I don't know. Michelle and I have, we came up through addiction with Sage. We rode the waves and we were in shape. When this happened, we just got closer together. But we had decided years before that we were going to be on the same page, that there wouldn't be blame. You did this or you did this.
Right, right.
And we just are riding the wave together. But I'm always interested in that. It's a difficult thing to be his biological mother. You share that with someone you got married to, regardless of whether or not you're friends, and it seems like you have a good relationship with everyone. But
well, I share with her that we have some gentlemen in our group that aren't the biological fathers.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we don't even think like that. Your loss is as substantial as ours.
Yeah.
And I try to communicate that to her, but it's not.
Yeah. It's when you raise, then there's a point where it's raising, it's not raising. So talking about our group, Sage passed away. I'm in a haze, whatever. I'm in a haze of gratitude, to be perfectly honest. The house was full of people. My life was full of people. Mm-hmm. I got messages from everyone. I really was just humbled and grateful for that. Early on, the thing that choked me up most was how kind people were. Common friend, Lance Miller, he said, hey, and I remember that you had lost a child. And I hate to say this, but I sent the obligatory text, man, I'm so sorry, blah, 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 to you. And that's what do you do? By the way, you and I weren't close before that. I had mad respect, but, you know, we were people that we knew, but didn't, you know, had never seen each other socially. And then Lance says, Jimmy wants to talk to you. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's probably great for me. And we went, I don't remember where we went, but we went and sat on somewhere and just, I mean, let it fly. Lance joined in with us. We're all three balling. We're laughing. It was quite an intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
2.5 hour breakfast. It was amazing. And,
right.
It struck me at that moment. Oh, now I know why he needed to talk to me. And that's what I need to do. And I have been able to do that a couple times since then, when I knew someone that I didn't know very well and their child passed away, instead of being like, hey, you okay? Is everything? I'm just like, my feet are there. Anything you want to do, say,
man,
you need to yell at someone. Here you go. That started with you. I'm eternally grateful. Like, you know, beyond.
Oh man. And that's kind of where the group started. Humble beginnings. But,
now that we're a worldwide powerhouse.
Yeah. Right. But oh my, let me just say this about that. The healing, even if it's incremental, the healing sitting across from someone that is going through the same hell that you're going through, that you don't even have to speak, right? It's just, there's something that's understood that's so incredibly deep, and so it's like a spiritual balm. And those meetings we had, those breakfasts, and then we just continued it. I remember at one point you said, do you think anyone else would want to do this? Yeah. And I said, I was hoping you would say that. And you're just a natural at it. But
well, leave it to me to bring AA into everything.
Oh, it's great. Yes. But it works.
It really does work. It works if you work it.
It works if you work it. But there's nothing like it. And I've told this story to you before. The meeting I was at where Aaron hadn't been gone long, and you're still in a daze. I mean, a serious fog. Serious fog. And it's not because you worry where they are. It's none of that. It's just, okay, how in the world do I put one foot in front of another one going forward for the rest of my prescribed life? What do I do? Mm-hmm. How in the world is this going to happen? And everyone at that service had put their hands on me in Pentecostal fashion, and it was great. It was great. And I was just soaking it in. Thank you, God. The people care. The people are here praying. They wanted me to come here. Heather's there. We're hanging. And now it's over, and I'm back getting a coffee. It's kind of starting to filter out. And one stoic man walks toward me out of that crowd. And there was something different about him. Uh-huh. And he just came to me, and he said, I lost my son. And I'm telling you, he said, Jimmy, nobody will ever understand quite like someone else. You will get more healing from people that have been through it and are still walking through it. And man, that flooded me. And I will always remember that. I don't know who he was, but I still don't know. But what he said was, and that's the first time that early on, someone that had been going through it, for his son passed at 18, I remember. And he must have been 70 years old.
And that lets you know right there, it doesn't go away.
No.
It doesn't. And
yeah.
Interestingly, I don't want it to go away.
Thank you. Try saying that to someone.
I know.
They don't get that at all. It's not a badge. There's a sweetness about holding Aaron's memory up and honoring him, his presence, this awesome presence here on this earth every day.
So we asked the question in our group. We've talked about it. If you could go back, knowing what you know now, knowing the heartache, the pain, the tragedy that's going to happen, would you go back and not have that child? 15, 16 guys in this room right here. And nobody says, yeah, I'd go back and not. No.
Ooh, no.
Even the people that aren't necessarily super cool with God right now and you have trouble being, they don't say that.
Yeah.
Never. Therefore, I'm not want to lose the memory. And with that memory is going to come pain as long as I'm here on this earth, which is, by the way, is okay because this world is full of pain. Like, if I can take this, bring it on.
Yeah.
Like, whatever that is now, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not, nothing's foolproof. It doesn't turn you into Superman, but man, It is a superpower knowing where you're headed. It is a superpower not being afraid of pain, because pain is always existent for you. So you don't spend half of our time, I literally believe, in my life previously, I was running from pain. Therefore, I couldn't get things accomplished or have peace or be still in God's presence, because I was literally running from pain or discomfort. Mm. Not doing that anymore, because it's always a little uncomfortable, a little painful, correct?
Yes, it is.
So why don't we just sit in it? Mm-hmm. Your experience when you were five, your temperament probably doesn't hurt, because you're a peaceful human being. But that experience that you had when you were five, bringing you to this place, it's like, what we can do. You came to me, then I come to others. You and I are talking. I think anyone else want to do this? I have two fathers,
right,
Ward and Mark Robbins, and I had been talking to them, and did not have the same experience as us, but they had talked to therapists who had never lost a child, and they don't want to talk to you because you don't know what I'm going through. And then my friend John Phillips, mm-hmm. the five of us sat around my kitchen table,
right,
and had our first little meeting. And I hate how big our group has become, but I love how big our group has become.
Right.
I hate that there's that many people doing it, but what a healing. And you said it just a second ago, and we talked about it last time. We could just sit here mm-hmm. and not say anything and be comforted, because that's the only time that there's double digits of people in a room that know exactly how I feel ever in my life.
Yeah.
Outside of that hour and a half once a month, that never happens to me. I don't know about you, but I'm never in a room with 15 people that lost a kid.
No.
Without anyone that hasn't.
Yeah. You know? I'm so with you.
Like, it's our world for that moment. Yeah.
Have you ever said this to Sage? And I found myself saying this. Aaron, we're going to be all right here. Don't take guilt with you. It's okay. See you soon. Please enjoy where you are. Do you ever feel that?
Yeah. I do. My larger assumption is that where he is, there isn't any guilt.
Amen.
I would say that is a fleeting thing. Like, I don't know why, but the moment he was gone, I just, well, man, I hope he knows how much I loved him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And he does. He does.
But you're like, is there something that had to happen here? You know, I don't know the rules. And one of the things about not being, I'll say this. I don't have it all figured out dogmatically, because nobody does. Everybody's got a different version.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be surprised. I'm cool with whatever God's got there.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't care.
Right.
Cool. Whatever.
Yeah.
Like, if God says, hey, man, I got to be honest with you, man. My name wasn't Jesus. It was Pete, and they got it wrong. I'm not going to be all distraught. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If there's someone there that I didn't plan on seeing there, I'm going to be cool with it.
Yeah, because you're not the judge anyway.
Because I'm not going to be the judge. I can do the thing. I will not be the guy going, but look at all these works I did, God. Didn't I earn my way into heaven? Because I know I can't. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing about knowing you're a piece of shit. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It means in my best efforts are as filthy rags. I'm comfortable with that. Like that being the thing. But I know this life means something. So I hope when he was here that it was expressed to him how much he was loved. And I do believe, as time goes on, and maybe even the veil gets thicker and all that kind of thing, I do believe there's no possible way he couldn't have known how much he was loved, because he was, as are his two brothers, everything to his mom and I. Her parents, Michelle's an only child, so that's the only grandchildren they have, so they were everything to them. Mm-hmm. My extended family, my brother and my sisters, my nieces and nephews, my mom, who's still here. By the way, when Sage passed, the very first thought in my head, I drove up, I parked, the dad that he was at his house met me in the yard, and I said, is he okay? And he said no. And I knew he was, I thought about I felt my dad with him. I just thought about my dad. I'm like, he's with my dad. And I don't know why I had that. There was nothing preconceived about right. that. The whole way to that house, I was yelling at God, surely we're going to get one overdose allowed. This will wake him up and this will be the end of this crap. But when I knew he was gone, I knew he was with my dad. I don't know. I have to believe they absolutely know. They're both, if they're not snowboarding or whatever, they're watching this.
I think they are.
As you and I are doing it, you said before, we're going to have this amazing dinner with all of us dads in this group that we have and all of our sons, and we get to meet them. I mean, if you can't look forward to that,
right?
I don't know what you got. You know,
I don't know what you got. I feel
sorry for the atheist, man. This would suck.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine doing this without God?
No. I like to think that this wasn't a mistake. God didn't make a mistake with all our different varying personalities, likes, dislikes, colors. Just put it all in one big bowl and stir it up. Everything was on purpose. God made Sage just like he was going to make Sage. Mm-hmm. That's the way Sage.
Yeah.
Sage is in the presence of God with Aaron and so many beautiful children. With their own thumbprint.
Yeah.
Circling back, I know, but why? What is this concept of getting to heaven? Now we're all robots and we're different. Look, that's still Aaron and Sage. They're there. God wanted them there like they are, and they'll go from that forward there. I just love to think of their personalities on stun, just like they were here, the same people.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm taking it one step further than that. If we are known, we'll be known as we're known.
Which is where I'm getting that. Yeah. That Bible verse.
We have this. I was kind of raised thinking that if you committed suicide, your last act of, like, it was the last thing you did before you died was the whole pie. You know, I mean, oh, he said a prayer with me. So I don't know how many times my parents or someone in our church tried to convince us that an atheist was okay that he went to heaven because they had prayed with him right beforehand. I mean, we justify what we want to believe. But my heart and my mind all tell me that we have decisions to make when we're there. The devil was an angel. In that life, he made a decision. I do believe that we will have decisions to make when we are there.
Yeah.
Because if God did what let us go through all of this and then took our free will away in heaven, how heavenly would that be?
Yeah.
If there's no free will, we're just animals and we have no soul. So my instinct is that we have decisions to make when we are there in heaven.
Yeah.
Consistently making decisions, and that by living this life, especially the way we've gotten to live it. I was with my our brother and our friend Lance one time, and we were talking about kids, and you know, my heart's hurting because there's a hole in mine that I'm missing, and I just thought heaven is going to be so much better for me than it is for those two. I feel so sorry for them. Now, I love these two guys like as close as I can be, but heaven's going to be better for me in some ways because I'm going to get that thing that I didn't, that I,
man.
So if we have decisions to make there, I think the hell is a door locked from the inside. The C.S. Lewis quote seems pretty genius to me. And we all are trying to figure out things that aren't figure outable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. My heart tells me, the signs that I see tell me that my son is fine. Tells me that I miss him and I hurt, but that he's okay. Maybe way, way better than okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how they do it without thinking there's a next awesome thing.
I mean, as a bet hedger, I would just...
Yeah.
Probably go with it, but I don't even believe that way anymore. I mean, I like feel it.
Yeah.
I'm in tune with it.
It for me, at such an early age to have poked my head up over the clouds and feel it and really take it in. Now, it wasn't just, it was a good, solid moment of warmth. It was almost like you could take your hand and put it in a fire and not get burned. It was that warm. It was that, you know, if you were freezing. You know what I'm saying? It was just very real. Very real. And it has really helped me. And it's really helped me a lot.
So that. 40, 50 years ago, that happens. And then in 2020, it enables you to call me, share not only losing a child, but share with me the near-death experience that I so greatly, by the way, that was you were my introduction to that. Cause I'm like, wow, man, Jimmy's really peaceful about this. Like so then I start reading books and I start watching YouTube videos and that Mary C. Neal book that we both shared, Seven Lessons from Heaven, just the realest part of it. And the ripple of that, who knows? So that happened that long ago, just so you had to go through all this crap just so you get to tell me and whatever it is that I'm gonna share with somebody else that makes it through there. I don't think that God's will was for our sons to die, certainly not the way they did. It keeps me from blaming him. I don't think it's his will, but it's right. Certainly is his plan. It's part of his plan. I'm in his plan. By the way, we can pray for your will to be done or we cannot, but it's going to be done. We might as well just ask for it.
Just
right?
Have a good attitude. You know what I mean?
Give me the lashing, man.
Yeah.
It's going to, God's will be done regardless of how we feel about it. So, if I can get okay with that, the pain, the discomfort, right. It makes me search you out. It makes you search me out. It makes us search our other brothers in this thing out and give each other those things. And if I didn't have that pain, maybe I didn't. Maybe I don't. If you didn't have the pain, maybe you don't search me out. Mm-hmm. If I don't have the pain, maybe I don't search out another guy. Yeah. And then we don't have a room full of guys getting healthy together, trying to get healthy together.
Right.
So the pain serves a purpose.
Yeah. Yes. And like you said, we're not running from this. We're actually running into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, this is my reality. Let me get everything in this that I can to benefit and to benefit others, to pass it on. I'll tell you one thing that about the experiences is the actual moment of passing into the next world is so like falling off a log. It is not a, you know what I mean? Hollywood has turned it into this horrible thing to be dreaded. I'm telling you, it's natural. Listen to the way she says in that book when she's down under the water and she can feel a pop and her spirit come out. There was no pain.
With a major fear of drowning while she's 20 feet under the water.
Right. That was it.
I mean, I always say to somebody, like I know, but I do. I don't have to go through it. But I'm like, if you're somewhere stressful and you're in physical pain, you're not dying. Don't worry.
Yeah, right.
If you're having physical pain, don't worry too hard because you're not going to die.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Because when you die, there is no pain. I've studied enough of them to know.
You're over there already.
When you go, it's peaceful. It's pain-free. Then you don't have you. I think that I've read guys, they realize how much pain was in their body when they don't have it anymore. That's why I'm tattooing mine up. It's this is just a vessel and mine's got bumper stickers on it. it's just a vehicle, Jimmy.
Yeah, man, you know I'm with you. Come on.
Just tatting it up. I know you're as awesome. You're going to go play on a Kenny Chesney record after we finish this today. I hope you make magic like always.
I hope it's your song.
It's not. You know, I got a couple Tim McGraw cuts this morning. It's not.
Oh, you did?
I found out about it. And all I, when you said you're going to cut a Kenny Chesney record, I was a little pissed off because I don't have any songs in there. I always end this with a two-part question. The two parts are, what is the worst thing that ever happened to you? And what is the best thing that came out of that?
Wow, that's great. That's a great question. That's a great question. I mean, the first part of that is obviously going to be losing Aaron is the worst thing. And of course that happened to him, but it also affected me. So I'm gonna say that, the worst thing. I've experienced losses. My folks, both my folks, have gone on. Kim and I's first child was a miscarriage way up into pregnancy. So I actually have two sons over there.
Wow.
It was far enough along where the doctor told us it was a boy. So I'm sure that he met Aaron and said,
yeah.
All right, finally. So that would be the worst, losing Aaron. The best thing, and this is an easy answer for me because it all revolves around that moment, that the process of continuing to realize where he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, last week I woke up crying because I was having a dream of Aaron as a little boy running through the house, you know, with little blonde hair, just playing, asking me questions, just enjoying the day. And so when you have those and you wake up and you're just bawling, and then you think, oh, thanks for that. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that, Bennett. Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
To see him. So the best thing to come out of it is even a deeper yearning to be in heaven. I'm looking forward to that. And while I'm still on my way there, to try to spread the love and a little awesome vision, mm-hmm. and a little lighter look at it all. You know, there is hope. There's an amazing amount of hope.
I mean, and you're doing just that. Is playing on, you play on people's records, which by the way, sometimes they're new, sometimes they're older, but you're getting ready to go play on a Kenny Chesney record. Does it change your approach on that stuff? I mean, in some ways it means more to me, in some ways it means way less. So I'm just curious on your side of the street.
I think the only, honestly, just the first thought that came to my mind was, I'm sitting there starting, you know, on the 30th of May, 2019, going forward, with this extra thing in the room that no one has a clue that I have. This expectancy, this excitement, this lighter approach. You dig that? You don't like that? Let's do another one. Here, let's do another one. What do you want? Is this cool? Is this sucking? Let's get Mark Hill in here. Or Craig or Tony. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. All right, we'll get you happy. That's, I just want you to be happy with this. It is a lighter approach.
You have more of that guy, by the way?
Oh, what's that?
You have more of that guy? You appear to not compete at all. You're like, if you don't like what I do, you've always probably been that way, but are you more?
Oh yeah.
Even more, mm-hmm. that guy.
I am, because this is something I'm doing today, and I'm so, you know, I love music. We love music. We just want to, I would do it if they didn't pay me. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't pay me, but I would do it anyway, but yes, it's all a lighter approach, but it's kind of fun to be on the ready should someone asks me about what it is that I believe in, and if they see a piece in me. And, at that point, I will go over to the side of the room and I'll just let them know, here's why I'm like I am. I mean, I got some hope. I got hope.
Hey, man, love is patient. And I don't know what that means to everyone, but what it means to me is you don't have to lead with it.
Yeah.
You don't have to lead with your dogma or your, you can, it's fine, whatever. Don't lead with politics. To me, if you lead with politics, you're going to have half the friends in the world. And if you lead with religion, you're going to have about an eighth of the friends, because the likelihood of you winding up in winding up talking to a spirit-filled Pentecostal Southern Baptist hybrid Catholic now is very rare. I don't have dogma. I have a relationship.
Yeah.
And you have always been someone in that that piece that you got from that five-year-old kid getting hit with that pencil. It does carry over. And we always say in recovery, you know, you look at someone and say, I want what he's got. Not in an envious way, but like, I want what he's got. Stick with the winners. I'm going to do that. And if you look at someone else who knows all the rules and knows all the big book and all the things to do, but their life's in shambles, and you're like, I don't want that. Well, I can say as a father who lost a child, as a musician, a songwriter in fear of imposter syndrome constantly, and whatever it might be, I want what you got. I do. And I have some of that now because I've spent time with you, and you came to me, we've gone to other people, and it's changed. I don't know how much credit to give to each particular thing, but I'm so grateful for each little thing that happened to keep me off of, I say left road, because right road was, I'm going to walk straight into all of this.
Yeah.
With my big ass mouth and my, you know what I mean? And my short fuse or whatever it is, but I'm going to walk straight into it and do the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
And left road was, I've talked about it on here. I had to, you know, God, if you take one of my kids, I'm drinking again.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have been that sweet little alcoholic over in the corner of the bar. And man, he lost his son, patting him on the head. I would have ruined everyone's life. And I mean, everybody's close to me. And I would probably be in jail and, or dead myself. What an honor that would be to my son if I took that out, right? And somehow God took any desire to be that idiot that would disrespect my son and his memory so much as to mm-hmm. do the same thing. So now I'm cool with living to 100. I'm cool with living to next week.
Yeah.
Either one. I enjoy the grind we have to do a little more. I'm still a human being, still got its selfish streak, all the things that we can do, but, man, I'm not as worried about it. I'm not afraid of death. And,
no. That's great.
I know you're not either. That's you and 10 of my friends that come in here have taught me that. I'm helping teach the new guys that. Like, we're not out there playing in traffic, but not being afraid of death is killer. I recommend it highly.
Right.
You know.
Oh man. We talk about the reluctant road we're on. We didn't pick it. We wish we weren't on it. But this road, it can have a piece about it. I mean, do I miss Aaron every second? Do I breathe him in and breathe him out? That boy mm-hmm. was just so unbelievably awesome. You know, I remember driving to the service and seeing everybody on the roads. I know you guys went through this. You're seeing cars stop at stop signs. You're seeing people arguing in a parking lot. I'm going to this place where I'm going to put my son away, right? And I'm wondering, how in the world is this world even turning around? How is this?
How are you going about your day?
How are you? Do you not see? And to out of that, have a desire to try to help someone that just started that road or someone that's been on it for 20 years longer than I have. And maybe my little something can help them a little bit too. I mean, I don't think I have anything special to offer, but because of that thumbprint, I have just what I have to offer. And maybe it'll find ears somewhere out there that'll help someone.
The willingness to share it. You got a lot to offer, but I understand what you're saying. I am not sure what I have to offer. Like, it's just the regurgitation of anything good I've heard, and I can do that. But the willingness to come do it, you know, to come sit here and do this, it's not in my nature. It is not in my nature to sit down and talk about this in front of people. I don't care about my nature anymore. My nature sucks.
You know, no.
My nature never did anything to get me in rehab. I don't need to follow my nature. I know if I know what's right now, I'm not foolproof. I'm just trying to do it. Just do it, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's not what I want to do. Just screw my nature. You know, mm-hmm. that guy will get you in trouble.
Boy.
But when we have the knowledge of what's right and then we don't go chase it, that's our own fault. But I couldn't be more grateful for you. You're an absolute genius musician. It's funny because one of our funny stories is about you picking up the guitar in the studio and just blazing. I mean, you play humble guy, but you really are very special at that. And I love your fake humility. It's awesome. Because you're bound to know how good you are. No, it's not fake. Because the truth is, it isn't who you are. It's what you do. But I love that. And that the truth is that the respect that I go, man, this is a guy that's a giant in my business. And I know that's a go-to. And us getting to work together a little bit on the Jared Neiman record, enough relationship and respect there to when it happened, when our worlds collided,
boy.
I'm grateful for those. So if all of this music business and all the crap that we do and have gone through and whatever, and all the records and the songwriting can collide us at the right moment, cool. Maybe this thing's a platform and not so much I am not impressed with me. You know what I mean? I'm not impressed with as much with what we do. Interestingly, now I do it for the right reason a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still a capitalist, still want to make money, but I want to do something great. I'd rather skip all the average if I can, just wipe it off the table. And unfortunately, a lot of times I'm shooting for great and we wind up on that average table. It just happens.
Same here.
You go there?
Mm-hmm.
Service industry. We have to do what we're doing. But I'm grateful for our roads. I'm not grateful for how they crossed, but I'm grateful that they've crossed. If I got to be in this shit box, I'm glad I'm here with you.
Back at you.
Instead of being in our own. So thank you, man. Thanks for doing this.
I love you. I love you so much.
Love you too, brother. You're the best. Appreciate you. Rap.
I got so, that was so good, I made a mess back there.
Did you really?
Good Grief, Good God Show is brought to you in loving memory of Sage Michael Warren. And this episode is brought to you in loving memory of Aaron Sloan.